She's a mortgage mom.
This is Debbie Marcoux, the mortgage mom. Do you have questions about a mortgage? Need some help with real estate? Give me a call. It's 844-935-3634. Or hey, go to my website, mortgagemomradio.com.
She's a mortgage mom. She can get things done. When you're in need and don't know where to go, pick up the phone and call mom.
Debbie Marcoux is licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act, California NMLS ID 237926, also licensed in Texas and Tennessee, 184373, Arizona 0941504, and Nevada 57237.
Do you own your home? Have you considered what could happen to your home if something happened to you and your family had to go through the dreaded probate process? Hello, I am the estate planning mom and my name is Krista Hermance. I am an estate planning attorney at Hermance Law. If you own your home and something happened to you, depending on how title is held, your family may have to go through probate court. Probate in California can take an average of 12 months to 2 years to complete. It is very expensive and public. A will, while it states how you want your stuff distributed, doesn't actually avoid probate. It just guarantees it. If you want to avoid probate, a trust might be your best option, and we can help you figure that out. We have offices in Ventura, Westlake Village, Santa Clarita, and work with clients virtually throughout California. For information, text WILL to 474747. Again, text WILL to 474747.
This attorney advertising is intended for general information only, not intended to be legal advice, nor does it create an attorney-client relationship. Attorneys at Hermance Law are licensed to practice law in California only. You should seek advice from a legal professional licensed in your state. Hermance Law is located in Ventura, California, and can be reached at 805-518-9633. Debbie Marcoux is licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act, NMLS ID 237926. Also licensed in Arizona 0941504, Georgia 69178, Illinois 031.0058339, Nevada 57237, Oregon, Tennessee 184373, Texas, Washington MLO 237926, Heidi Slagle Points, California DBO 1666881.
She's a mortgage mom. She can get things done. When you're in need and don't know where to go, pick up the phone and call mom.
All right, well, welcome to Mortgage Mom Radio. I am Debbie Marcoux, and today I have got Krista Hermance with Hermance Law. Krista is the trust attorney that I've been raving about for the last few weeks on the show. So I'm so excited to have you here. Krista, thank you so much.
Thank you, Debbie, for having me.
Of course. So, you know, we had you on earlier in the year. I want to say it was like January, February. It was really early in this year. And then we haven't had you on again, you know, since then. And it's just such an important topic for us to talk about trusts and wills and how to hold your house. And I've got a couple of things that I want to ask you today because I just recently had you complete my trust. And your attorneys came out and signed all the paperwork with me at my house. And it was really a great experience. But one of them actually said something that kind of put me backwards, even being in mortgage and doing this every day and understanding the loan process and trusts and holding title and everything. So I've got some questions for you that I want to ask, but I want to first let everybody know that Krista is here to help you. She is here to get you the information that you need. If you are watching and you want to put your questions into the feed, please do that. It is really, really important to make sure that you are setting up your family for a situation where maybe you're gone. And then what happens, right? And I don't want this to be a really sad show, but it is important. It's important that we're setting up our family in the right way and, you know, that there's things in place to make things just a little bit easier, right? So you guys, please, if you're watching and you want to ask Krista questions, please put them into the feed. And Matt's going to interrupt and he's going to ask those questions for us so that Krista can answer them. If you're watching, let us know that you're here. Give us a thumbs up. Say hi. You know, we want to know that you're here and you're watching us. So here is my question for you, Krista. Okay. Oh, and I should probably say this. If you guys want to call and you want to ask questions or you want to get information from Krista, number one, Krista, what's your phone number?
Our phone number is 805-518-9633.
Perfect.
And you can also text 474747 WILL, W-I-L-L.
Perfect. Okay. And if you guys want to give us a call, it's 844-935-3634. We can always get you put in touch with Krista so that, you know, if you can't remember her telephone number, or text WILL to 474747. So whatever you guys need, please reach out because this is really, really important stuff. So here is my question, and we're going to get into, I've got a couple for you. Okay. And these I haven't asked. I didn't ask these in previous shows. So number one, I know that as a trust attorney, you absolutely hate it when somebody is doing a refinance and the mortgage lender tells them or has them take their loan or their house out of their trust and then put it back in the trust after closing. And I'll explain why we don't personally do that. Movement Mortgage does not make them take it out of trust. We leave it in trust. But I can explain why they actually do that. But can you tell me, why does that upset you? What are some of the things that you've seen happen? What are the benefits of leaving it in the trust versus taking it out, putting it back in? You know, give us that information.
So I think the biggest frustration that we have as estate planning attorneys is that when somebody does a refinance and the bank makes them take it out and put it back in their individual name, then when the refinance is done, everybody thinks everything's done. And it never actually gets put back into the trust. And so with all of the refinances that are going on right now, we've seen a very large mix of some clients that will contact us confused as to why they're now having to do this. And I say, it's perfectly normal. This is what the banks are requiring. And I tell them, just make sure that whatever you do, you put it back in your trust. Because if you have this trust, we go through all of this work, we get it set up for you. And if you have this trust set up and you don't put your house back into your trust after the refinance, there's really no point in having the trust because it doesn't protect having your house in your trust. That would still have to go through probate or at least some method of probate to get the house put into your trust if something happened.
Okay. So, and I've actually seen personally where the county assessor is not supposed to reassess you if it is going from you to your trust, from your trust mm-hmm. back to you, from you back to your trust. They're not supposed to be reassessing you because really you're the owner of that trust. You're the owner of the home and property ownership is not changing. However, I have seen where they have made mistakes and they have mm-hmm. reassessed the property from the title change. So that is one of my biggest fears when I hear we need to pull it out of the trust and put it back in. And so, you know, that is one, I don't know if you've seen that happen, but it is a struggle. I mean, the client has to go to the assessor and file paperwork and explain it was them all along and, you know, show them all of the information. So that is one of the fears that I have when people pull it out of the trust. One of the questions that came up though, which I don't know. So I'm going to let you answer. Okay. And I love it when I don't know. So I think it was your paralegal, and I can't remember her name, but she was just the sweetest thing. She said, well, in a lot of times when people pull their property out of trust, they will put it in as joint tenants where it should be community property. And I don't know what I would assume personally, what I've learned in all my real estate, you know, and mortgage life has been that joint tenants is better because if one passes, then 100% goes to the other person. So why would community property be better in that situation?
So when somebody is married and they own when they own property as spouses, I see it generally as joint tenants with right of survivorship. And what that right of survivorship means is that if somebody passes away and you own it together, the other person just automatically becomes a survivor. That avoids probate, right? It just automatically passes to them. What we see, though, is that because most people own it as joint tenants when they're married, if you own it as spouses, husband and wife, as community property, you actually get a tax advantage that you wouldn't get as joint tenants. And so what this tax advantage is called a step up in basis. And what that means is from the time that you purchase that property, so let's say you have an older couple that purchased the property in like the 80s, right? Whatever that tax basis is that they have, they own that as husband and wife as community property, then at the first spouse's passing, they get a step up in basis from when that time that property, when that spouse passed away. And so rather than them have capital gains taxes from 1980, they now get that new step up in basis. And so when they own it as community property, husband and wife, and that's the only way you can get this, is then you would get a double step up on basis when the second spouse passes away. And so then if it's then getting passed to the kids, those kids wouldn't have to pay capital gains taxes from 1980 to the date of the second spouse to pass away. And with joint tenants, you don't get that.
Oh, see, learning something new every day. That's huge. That is a big, big deal. Yeah, is there, you know, a lot of people choose joint tenants because if something did happen, then it automatically would go to the surviving spouse or the other person that is on title as joint tenants. Is there, so community property, typically they're going to set it up in any way that they want, 50-50, 80-20, and whatever their portion of, you know, the person that passes, whatever their portion of ownership was, would then actually go to whoever their heirs are. So it's not necessarily that you're married. I mean, I could own it with my sister and it could be 50-50. And if my sister passes, her 50% are going to go to her heirs, not come to me as the other owner of the home. So is there any fear or concern if husband and wife own it as community property 50-50? Does that put the spouse that didn't pass, the surviving spouse, does it put them at any kind of issue with the rest of the family should the spouse pass away and now 50% of it is supposed to go to heirs? Is there any concern there?
So it just depends on how the title is held. There's a bunch of different ways for that title to be held. And then if you bring a trust into it, the whole point of us doing this estate planning is to move that property into the trust so that it makes it very clear if something happens to one spouse, the other one then has all of the property for them to be able to use if they need to sell it, but it's part of the trust. This is one issue that I have seen come up very frequently with a lot of the probates that we're handling. So we do handle probate cases in Los Angeles County, Ventura County, where somebody will pass away and title is held in a property where their name is associated with it. So now their portion has to go through probate. So it's very important that you look at any property deed that you're associated with and make sure you understand if something happens to somebody, what's going to happen? Because people just don't understand this. And this is where things literally percentages of houses have to go through probate so that it can then get passed on to beneficiaries or heirs.
Okay. So, and that's why obviously I have you on to talk about trust and the estate planning and wills and power of attorneys and the whole thing, right? And so we got a little bit off topic, but it was something that, again, you know, I was kind of thrown back when I heard that. I've always kind of been conditioned, and I think that the majority of the loan officers in the business and escrow officers in the business are trained that joint tenants is the best way to go. So I really had to ask you that community property question, which that was absolutely amazing information I didn't know. So I'm going to just keep calling you and asking you questions all the time. But, you know, let's really get into probate because you're talking about how you do handle probate. And, you know, so basically somebody that did not in advance set up a trust, whether they had a will or they did not, the home has to go through probate if, you know, those things weren't set. So talk a little bit about probate. What is probate? You know, what is the process? How long does it take? What is the cost? You know, kind of give us that rundown of someone passes away, now what?
Okay, so the whole point of probate is that when somebody passes away and they own property or assets in their name, let's say that they, you know, if they're single and they have, if they own a house, it's worth, let's say, you know, $490,000. And maybe they have some checking accounts and some savings account. Let's say those are worth maybe $10,000. And they have a child, one child. It's, you know, the one child that they have, they're not married. So if they pass away and they have these assets in their name, it doesn't just automatically go to that child. And a lot of people think that, oh, well, I was the only child. It should just all go to me. Yes, potentially, but it has to go through probate to be able to get to them. And so that's where people get confused. So like you said, either having a will or not having a will, that doesn't matter, right? If their assets are owned in their name, it has to go through probate court to be able to get to the heirs or beneficiaries. Probate court in the state of California is basically just a court process where any assets that somebody owns at their passing then have to go through this process where creditors have a period to come and say, oh, you know, this much money is owed to me. It also gives the personal representative, or some people know this as executor, the ability to go through the estate.
Wait. So if I pass away and I've got $20,000 on a credit card, my kids have to pay it off?
Well, your kids don't, but your estate might have to.
Okay. I mean, Matt, what do you think? I mean, I always kind of thought, like, hey.
Medical bills, anything that you owe money for, they have this ability, this creditor period to be able to come and get money from the estate that's going through probate. Because the thing with probate is it's public, right? Anybody can go down to the courthouse, find out what you own, who you owe money to, and who your beneficiaries are. And that's one of the big things about having to go through probate is it keeps all of your stuff now public. So in this process, as your personal representative is going through everything, all of your assets are looked at to determine what the value is. This probate process is going to take anywhere from 1 to 2 years. It is not a quick process. So now it's public. It's a very long process. And at the end, assuming that we go back to that scenario where we talked about it's a single parent that's now giving everything to their sole beneficiary, their one child, then at that point, that house can get distributed and that money can get distributed, but there's fees, okay? Probate court is also very expensive. And all of the fees for probate are set by statute by the state of California. So if you have an estate that's worth $500,000, like the scenario that I said, it would cost $26,000 in fees for that estate to have to go through probate. That's just the fees. That's not including court costs, filing fees, publication fees, all of these other kind of fees. So generally, probably about $2,000 around there for that. So you're looking at almost $30,000 for only a $500,000 estate to go through probate. If the estate is worth more money, and in California, we know houses are very expensive. So you own one house, it's going to be a percentage of that.
So, and then on top of that, if somebody hires an attorney like you to help them through the probate process, then there's going to also then be the attorney fee on top, right?
So that's what those fees are associated with. That $30,000 is made up of attorney's fees, personal representative fees, and all of the court costs and filing fees that are associated with it.
Got it. So I can tell you that I did not spend anywhere near that to put my trust together. So
correct.
I'm saving my family all of that. Those additional fees, the time, the energy. I mean, you're already distraught. You've lost somebody that you love. The last thing that you want to do is to start going down this road of everybody picking through your family assets and determining what you do and you don't get to have, you know, and then pay money for it, right? So how is that money due? When, you know, if somebody passed away and all that was really there that had a lot of equity in it was a home, and they can't obviously sell the home until the probate court says, hey, you know, this is, you get it, yes, and yes, you can sell it, and this is the price you can sell it for. Because I know, being the lender on the other end, I get contracts for homes that are in probate, and we're waiting for the court to approve the contract. So How do they pay? Are those fees do up front? Do they have to somehow scrape it together, or do they, you know, can it come out of proceeds of a sale? How does that work?
Yeah. So it would come out of the proceeds of the sale, towards the end of the probate. So at that end of the 1 to 2 year period, when all of the accounting is done, then that's when all of the fees get paid as part of the estate kind of wrapping up.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so, but if you have a house that is the only asset, and then all of the fees have to be paid for that house, then there might be refinancing that needs to be done on that house to actually get money to pay the fees associated with it. So we do see that happen sometimes as well.
Okay. So we have Heidi is on. She's in the chat. So Heidi usually is on the show with me, but when we've got a guest on like you, it's hard to get the three of us into the screen and into the shot. And a lot of times it kind of breaks up and we lose sound. So we found that two people is better than three. But she's saying, hi, Debbie and Krista. So she's there. And Heidi, he's going to throw out some questions for you too. And then Matt says, well, I'm, what am I, chopped liver over here? And so then Heidi said, you know, and Heidi says, hi, Matt. So I could see this little chat that's going on down the screen as you and I are talking. And I guarantee you that Heidi will have something good to ask. So I'll keep watching for that. And anybody else that is out there listening, if you guys have questions for Krista, as you're hearing us talk about the trusts and the probate and the wills and, you know, everything else, please jump in and ask those questions. We want to make sure you get those answers. If you guys are listening to us on Saturday morning, we are live on Wednesdays, live at 5 on Wednesdays on Wednesdays on YouTube. That made sense. So all you guys have to do is find our show. Go to YouTube, look for Mortgage Mom Radio, subscribe to the channel. And what I've learned from all my Bitcoiners, you got to click on the bell button and then you have to click again and you have to click all so that you know when we go live and you guys can click on the notification and watch us go live. So make sure you guys are watching on Wednesdays. And if you like listening on Saturdays, we love that you follow. And if you guys want to get a hold of Krista, give us that telephone number again.
It's 805 518-9633.
And you're, give them your website, because I'm a big website person. I like to remember websites.
Yeah, ours is hermanslaw.com.
Okay, perfect. So we're talking wills, we're talking probates, which isn't great if you have a will. So, here's Heidi. She's got a question. Read it, Matt, because I can see, but not great.
Yeah, Heidi asks, what is the time frame a person should hire a probate attorney when needed?
So it really depends on how you're doing emotionally, what's going on in the estate that you need to get it started. But just know that if you have assets where somebody has passed away and those assets are going to have to go through probate, you want to get started sooner than later, because it's going to take a long time to go through that probate process. Again, it's about 1 to 2 years for everything to get finalized and wrapped up. And that's uncontested. So if you have where maybe there's a child that was disinherited and they contest the will, then you could be going through years of litigation, depending on the state.
So going to that, back to that, let's say that there is no, we are going through probate and it is a 1 to 2 year process and the house has a mortgage on it and the mortgage payments need to be made. Who makes the payments? What happens?
Yeah, so we see this a lot with clients where they, if the parent that passed away, if they're able to access money from their accounts, once the probate is opened and they're able to get that money, then they can use money from that account to pay bills, right? To pay the mortgage and keep it going. I do see it a lot where maybe they don't have access to funds yet. And so the personal representative or the kids or somebody in the family is now making payments to make sure that the bills are staying current, that the mortgage is getting paid. And then they can get reimbursed from the estate, depending on what happens. But yes, that is an issue that we do see come up.
Right. And you have to hope that there is somebody in the family that has the funds and the, ability to make that mm-hmm. payment on top of the rest of their living expenses, right? I mean, that's like,
exactly.
Hey, Deb, you need to make an extra mortgage payment until we can get through this probate, right? Mm-hmm. That can be very draining on a family. I didn't realize that there was a way to get to the assets of that person that passed until probate was over. So is that something that they have to file and petition for and then wait for court approval to be able to go into those assets then to apply them towards important things, I'm assuming. And it has to probably be approved, right? What it's allowed to be applied towards.
Yeah. So what it is when from the time that you start that initial probate proceeding, you would file a petition and that petition would have all of the information. You then have to wait for the court hearing, which we're seeing is anywhere from 45 days to 3 months away, right? And then once that hearing happens, assuming that it's granted and you have the personal representative that's then assigned, the person that, hopefully is the one that you had petitioned to be in charge, essentially, then the judge grants that. You wait for what's called letters of testamentary to then be able to get, you have this court document that says, okay, you now have the authority to act as the personal representative for this estate. You can take it to the bank and they can give you the money from the account so that you can open a new account in the name of the estate and pay bills and do things that you need to.
Gotcha. So all of those big, huge words that you're talking about and everything that you're saying, to be honest with you, I really don't ever want to go down that road and I don't want to know about it. So mom and dad, I know my mom has a trust. Dad, we've got to talk because we don't want to have to go down that road. I mean, honestly, like you've already lost a parent. That's the last thing that you want to worry about, right? Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about trust and how trust is going to protect you from all of that. And, let's say I pass tomorrow. How quickly can my heirs, everybody that's part of my trust, how quickly can they get to what they need?
So when you have a trust, assuming that you have all of your assets properly funded in your trust, meaning you have your house in your trust, you have your bank accounts in your trust, if everything is set up the way that it should be, then they can immediately, once getting that death certificate, be able to go and start acting on your behalf. So you have your, what we call successor trustee. Some people know this as an executor that you've named. So they can then go start acting as the person in charge of your trust to be able to make sure that bills are getting paid, that the things that needing to get done can get done. because you aren't restricted by court's time frame, right? It's private. And that's the really great thing about the trust, is it keeps the cost down. It makes it super easy for the executor to be able to go and do the things that they need to do.
Now, what happens if there is some sort of argument with who was named as the executor and the other, you know, family members, trustees of the trust? What happens in that situation with a trust if there is any kind of an argument over how was it supposed to be handled or they didn't do it right? What does happen in that situation?
So any situation that occurs where somebody doesn't agree with terms of a trust, they would have to file a court action in probate court. So thereby bringing what should be a private matter in a trust to a public matter, because they are now filing a probate action against that. And honestly, as much as trusts are meant to keep things out of court, I see trusts in probate court all of the time. And I will tell you, the number one thing that I see is when somebody in a trust, somebody that has a trust, name co-executives, co-trustees to work together, because maybe they have two kids and they can't pick one to manage it. So they say, let's have both of them do it. Those are what I see in court. People not working together, or one not pulling their weight of the things that they need to do and trying to get somebody removed. And so it takes this private matter and then puts it in the public probate proceeding.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that's why when I asked that question, can I have two? You told me I wouldn't recommend it.
Yes, I do. Yes.
That's what I was wondering.
Over on Facebook, Deborah chimed in to say hello.
All right. Well, hello, Deborah. Thank you for watching as usual. And Deborah watches us all the time, so we appreciate that very much. Again, anybody out there, you guys are watching, if you have questions for Krista, please go ahead and type them into the feed, and we'll make sure she gets those answered for you. Krista, thank you so much for answering all of these questions. This is such good information. It really, really is. And it is really important. Please, everybody listening to me, if you don't have a trust, you need to get one. Your will is not enough. Written down on a napkin what you want to happen is not going to be enough to make sure that everything goes smoothly if something does happen to you. This is really, really important stuff to think about.
We have a couple questions. Let's start with Heidi on YouTube. Says, once you have a trust, how do you get your property and assets put in your trust?
Ooh, good question, because I need to do that next.
So, that is what we call funding your trust. And so having a properly funded trust is really what makes your trust work. Because if you think about it, your trust is made up of all of these decisions and all of these things, your wishes that you want. And so for your wishes to be able to be granted, essentially, in this trust document, your stuff has to be in the trust to be able to be distributed. And so moving checking accounts, changing beneficiary designations to point to the trust if that's what you want, investment accounts, your house. Part of the process that we do is preparing a grant deed, transferring title from you as the owner of your house to you as the trustee of your trust. So it's thereby moving it from you individually to you as the trustee of your trust. And this is stuff you're going to do throughout your lifetime. You know, as you continue to acquire wealth, you buy new houses, you sell houses, you're always going to be funding your trust with your assets. Another thing that we do is called a general assignment. So it's basically just assigning all of your stuff, right? Your kitchen stuff, your sofa, your clothes, cars, all of your stuff, your personal items. We're assigning it generally to your trust to just say everything is now in the name of my trust.
So then what happens with my motorhome and my quads and my toys? Those are all part of the trust?
Yeah. So you, when you sign your general assignment, you list them all generally in the name of your trust. So, and you know, it all depends when somebody passes away, what they want to happen with those things. Part of the estate planning process is you have what we call a personal property memorandum. So if you, over the course of your life, have things you want your quads to go to specific people, you can write that in your personal property memorandum. If your trustee says, well, you know, kids don't want them, I don't want them, then they sell them, right? So it's all things that can be done as part of that administration.
Gotcha. Perfect.
And then on Facebook, Deborah asks, would a will suffice if you are a single person with no heirs versus doing a trust?
Ooh.
So it all depends on what assets you have. So in the state of California, if you have an estate that's more than $166,250, your estate would have to go through probate. So if you have a bank account or multiple bank accounts, anything that has over that amount, those assets would have to go through probate to be able to get to your beneficiaries or your heirs. If you don't have kids, that makes it even more confusing. Who's going to get your stuff? And so by doing a will, or our recommendation would be a trust generally, then it makes it very clear who you want your stuff to go to. I see it so many times when it's going through probate where people forget, you know, as people get older, they forget that maybe they had a child from 30 years ago that they haven't seen, hasn't been part of the family. Well, if you don't have estate planning documentation that specifically disinherits that child is entitled to their fair share of whatever your estate is. And I see it happen, right? Is people forget and they don't specifically disinherit, or they don't think about it, or they have a deed from years and years ago and they have a child that has a percentage on their deed, right? Well, that child is they get part of that portion. And so there's just so many things that can come up if you don't look at it and look at putting proper planning in place.
Right. No, that's great. I can see a bunch of stuff all popping up right now for Krista. You're going to be busy here for a second. You're like, is this really an hour? I'm like, well, if we get that long, I don't know if we have enough content. We'll see, but I hope you don't have anywhere to go.
No, I'm good.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so Carrie on YouTube said, great info. Hey, ladies. And Dad chimed in, says, hi, guys. I was stuck at Verizon for over 2 hours. And Manny says hi. And Heidi asks, so do you take the general assignment to the bank or the trust to the bank?
So neither. You would actually take what we call a certificate of trust. And basically this, because your trust, like our trust is, it's like a 400 page estate planning document, right? All of these different documents that make up this portion. Your trust is private. Nobody needs to see the information that is in it. And so what we do is we say, take the certificate of trust that basically is this 3-page document that has the information that the bank needs to say, I have a trust. Here's my information. Here's the stuff I need for my account. Okay. And that's all that the bank should need.
Yeah. And when we do a mortgage, so if somebody is buying a brand new home and they want to hold it in their trust, they can complete a trust certification for us, which the mm-hmm. information that we're asking for should be part of that trust certificate that you're talking about. They do not need to send us 400 pages of their actual complete trust for us to get that home into the actual trust. And to be honest with you, I don't even have to see that trust certificate. I need them to complete on our form the answers to our questions so that we can approve that and then just go ahead and move title in. And the same goes with the refinance. If your home is already in your trust, you're going to complete that trust for us. You know, you're going to answer those questions and then we're going to go ahead and keep it in that trust for you. So that's actually good because I cannot tell you how many times that I have had people literally send me 300 pages of their trust. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is personal that, you know, they don't need to do that. So I'm happy that you actually brought that up.
And then over on Facebook, Dad asks, can you draw up a trust in another state versus the state you live in, or would it be voided from another state?
So you want to have a trust in the state that you live in is generally the way it would work. If you like live in the state of California, we would want to create a trust for you here, and then it would follow the laws of California. We do have quite a few people that are California residents. We create their trust here, and then they own property in other states. And so then what we do is we work with attorneys in other states to actually get a deed transferring it from you to your trust in the state of California. So it would work the same if you were in a different state.
Okay, so this is a really good question. What if I decide to move? So I live here, I'm in California, we've drawn up the trust in California. What if I decide to move to Arizona? Or what if I decide to move to another state? Do I have to go through all of this again, do it again? What happens?
So throughout your lifetime, people are going to move, right? They're going to move to different places. What I recommend is that you find an attorney or get a recommendation from me for an attorney in where you're moving to and have them review the trust to see if there's anything specific. I will tell you that we have clients that come in from out of state, will review their trust, and I know we're going to have to update the power of attorney, the Advanced Healthcare Directive, because those are specific California forms that we want to make sure that when you're in this state, they are specific to be able to allow you the things here, the protection that you need. So the same would be for being out of state.
Gotcha. All right. I see things popping up. What do we got?
Yeah. Heidi asks, as long as you are giving a small amount to a child, do you need to do a disinheritance of that child, or are you protected from them disputing the trust?
So I think what you mean is if you are disinheriting a child, should you give that child a small amount of money to specifically disinherit them? I've seen different ways of doing this, and what my recommendation generally is, if you are disinheriting a child, you need to specifically disinherit that child or give them an amount of money that is going to make it so that they will not contest the plan. Because if they contest it, a lot of the plans have this no contest clause that says, if you contest the amount of money I'm giving you in this plan, you get nothing. And so, like, I've seen it, and I think you hear it, like, on TV, like, in movies, like, well, I left him a dollar in the will, you know? Well, he's now a beneficiary, which means he has all rights and access to all of those estate planning documents because he's a beneficiary. And why wouldn't he contest it if he's only getting a dollar? Because all he's going to lose is a dollar, because if he contests it, then he can get his half share, right? So you have to put enough in there that would make it so that you think that they wouldn't contest it. Basically just, you know, this is the amount of money you get. If you contest it, you could get nothing. Or you specifically disinherit them and then they get nothing. But they can still contest it.
Ah, very interesting. And I mean, you hope that you don't have to disinherit kids. I mean, obviously, this is Mortgage Mom Radio. We want to go
estate planning mom. Right, so, you know, it's that works.
Yeah, Mortgage Mom Radio.
It does come up, though. It happens. And unfortunately, I do have clients where just, you know, things have happened in family situations and, you know, they want to make sure that their other kids are protected if something did happen.
Right. You know? It does. And you know, I mean, I can personally say that, you know, even blended families and stepchildren and, you know, a lot of times that does get very, very difficult. And, you know, so obviously these are really important questions to ask, and I'm happy that you're here answering them for us. Everybody that is listening, you guys, this is Krista Hermance, Hermance Law. She's the estate planning mom. Really, you have to get a trust. It is so important. You really have to think about that. The money that it's going to cost you to put that together up front is going to be significantly less than what it's going to cost your family if you do end up in probate. You know, one of the questions I wanted to ask you, I typed out really quick. I don't usually plan for a show, which I didn't really plan for this one, but I did have some specific questions that I wanted to make sure I didn't miss. And so I typed them out and I sent them to Heidi and Matt. And I said, don't let me forget to ask her this question. Is there any particular reason why somebody would do only a will but not do the trust? Is there any benefit at all?
Yes. So if you have an estate and family that you think is going to, no matter what, contest, then you want to have it in front of a judge so that the judge is already involved and is overseeing the proceeding, right? That is when you would want to have it in a will so that it is going in probate court. If you know that it's going to be contested and that you want it overseen, right, then you can just have a will.
Right. And let them all pay for it. I love it. We got anything else going on in there? Dad wants a trust. No, Dad, sorry. You can't get a trust from Krista. You've got to do it in Illinois where you live. Or you need to move to California like we want you to. So start packing, moving, working on it.
And I think Heidi feels a little slighted. She said, hey, trying to come up with good questions.
I love it. No, Heidi did great.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah. Actually, Heidi made a comment when you said, you know, if you have over. So Deborah asked, which I want to go back and make sure that we kind of talk about this again, because it was really good. Deborah asked, you know, I'm a single woman. I don't have any children. Is it really important for me to have a trust? You know, obviously, you know, if she doesn't really care where things go when she's gone, then I guess she wouldn't. Right. I mean, but if it's important to her to know that even her niece or, you know, I don't know what family she has, you know, but I mean, there's gotta be somebody that is, you know, blood related that she might want to see her things make it to, you know, a trust is still very important because she's going to end up in probate court if she doesn't. And then Heidi actually mentioned in her, you know, chat, she said, and you mentioned 166,000. And mm-hmm. Is that California or is that?
Yes.
Okay.
Just California.
Okay. So anybody listening in any other state, that number could be different. So you guys want to check into your trust laws and probate laws and all of those good things. But 166,000, as Heidi said, she goes, that is a very specific number. Do you have any idea where they came up with that number?
It's really just increased from inflation over the years. So it used to be 150,000 and it just recently went up to 166,250. And so I think it just kind of goes up, you know, a little bit as inflation increases.
Kind of like our loan limits. So let me ask you a question. Of that 166, are we talking cold hard cash or are we talking equity in a home? Would, you know, everything all together, 401k, IRA, bank account, you know, equity in a home, is it everything all combined is 166 or more? Or are we talking actual liquid funds?
So no, any assets over 166,000. And when you look at your home, it's not just equity. If you own a home that's worth $500,000 and you have $5,000 in equity, that home still has to go through probate because it has that fair market value, that sale value over that amount.
Gotcha.
And so it's, you know, when people look at it and they say, you know, because you know, you have people that are looking at doing estate planning. They're like, I don't need a trust. I don't have that much stuff. You know, I don't have that much money. Well, if you own a home, right, it doesn't matter how much equity. If you own a home, that home would have to go through probate. And people don't really understand that. And so that's really what gets that amount up there. You know, $500,000 for a fair market value of a house, not a lot of money in California. And that's not including anything else. That alone is $28,000 in probate fees. So you imagine, you know, a home once it gets up to $500,000 to $800,000 to $1 million, and then adding in bank accounts, if there's investment accounts or things like that where they don't have beneficiary designations, it adds up very quickly.
Yeah, it does.
On Facebook, Deborah added to hers a little bit, said, so if I put all my assets in a trust and I have no heirs at all, but I take care of my elderly mother, could I instruct all the dollars towards her care? But in the event that she's gone, can I direct it to the care for my dogs? Which I'm actually interested in this because
because Matt's got cats. He's got a lot of cats. So he needs to know if he can make sure his cats are taken care of. I think you can. I mean, haven't we heard stories about people? Right?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Give us the lowdown. Can we give the money to the cats?
Yeah. So you can't give it to the cats specifically, but you can give it to somebody for the benefit to care for the cats or the pets or whatever animals you have. And then going back to her question is we actually do that quite often where family members are taking care of their elderly parents. They want specific money that's set aside in trust that if something happened to them, that money could be there to care for their elderly parent. And then we do as part of the process, and a lot of people don't think about this before we start it, we ask, if something happened, who's your backup beneficiaries, right? Who would be there that you would want stuff to go to if there was nobody else in your line of people, your beneficiaries that you would want? And this is an opportunity, and so similar to the person, Deborah, I think, if you don't have anybody that you would want, you can give it to charity, right? You can put a charity in there and that they would get it as the backup if that was something that you wanted. But then at least you know, if you're putting it in there, you know who it's going to, right? Rather than potentially your heirs fighting over it in a public proceeding, because it's your stuff that's being public now. It's not that they get to fight over it, but it's public.
Yeah. If you haven't heard it in the show already, a trust is very important. We've definitely, you know, if you don't have one, you really need to look into it. Trust me, it's not an arm and a leg to get it done. And it is something that is going to just absolutely take care of your family in the future should something happen to you. So please, you guys, reach out. Krista's fantastic. You are California only, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So California only. If you are in it, we've got a lot of people that listen by podcast all over the country. We've got people watching YouTube all over the country. We understand, you know, I'm licensed in numerous states. Krista, if somebody that is watching the show or listening wants a recommendation to an attorney in another state, do you have, it sounds like it because you said you're going to talk to another. If I move, let's just say dad talked me into going to Illinois. Not going to happen. But let's just say, would you be able to recommend an attorney for me to talk to make sure that my trust gets reviewed for that state?
Absolutely, yes. I work with attorneys all over the country. And so I generally do refer other attorneys to people that reach out to me.
Okay. So one thing that you did for me, and I'm going to switch off of the trust topic for now. Do we have anything that we missed, Matt? We're good?
No, just dad saying bow wow meow.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad's going to leave the cats as boats. It's perfect. I want to switch topics really quick from the trust, and I want to talk a little bit about power of attorneys, medical directives. I know that, again, this is Mortgage Mom Radio. You're the estate planning mom. You really do specialize in families, making sure that your family is taken care of, families with young children. You know, I have a son who is 19 years old, going on 20, going on 10, you know, and I'm not saying that in a way that he's immature, but, you know, he's living at home and kids are living at home a lot mm-hmm. longer than what they used to. You know, I was out of the house at 19. I was like, I'm out, never coming back, right? But it's not that generation anymore. So they're staying at home a little bit longer. They're not getting married. They don't necessarily have a significant other. And it was really important when you and I talked that we get a power of attorney set up for Manny because of his heart condition and, you know, making sure that I can be the person that's making decisions. So I want you to talk a little bit about that. I know in a show that we did way at the beginning of the year, we taught you, you gave a great, kind of a great perspective or, you know, mm-hmm. situation where your kid goes away to college and then they get sick. So I want you to talk a little bit about that because I think it is really important for a lot of people to hear it.
Yeah. So a lot of times what people don't understand is that if they have a child that is now a young adult, so once they hit that age of 18, the parent no longer has the legal ability to make any medical decisions for them on their behalf, make any financial decisions for them on their behalf, do anything on their behalf, or know anything, right? Everything is protected, especially from a medical perspective, by HIPAA laws. And so when you have a child that then turns 18, you know, after having been so involved in their life and make all these decisions and get all this information, you're essentially cut off. And so by doing proper legal documents for these now young adults, you can still stay involved. And a lot of times I find that when you have a child that turns 18, they're not ready for you, like you said, to cut ties, right? They still need you involved to be able to help do banking stuff for them or call their credit card company or, you know, talk to the landlord about a lease or whatever it is.
Or pay their medical bill.
Pay the medical bills. Exactly. Because that's another thing that people think is they're like, well, they're on my health insurance, so I have to be able to see their stuff.
Right.
No, you cannot. Just like with college. If you have a child that goes away to college, you have no ability to access their documents in relating to their grades or anything within their college file because it's all protected. You have to get specific documents signed by your now young adult child to still be able to access stuff. And so some of the important documents. So we have a power of attorney, right? The power of attorney, we can either make it effective immediately or effective upon incapacity. You know, we check with the young adult. Do you want your parent to be able to make decisions for you now or only if something were to happen? And what that power of attorney does is it allows the child or anybody getting a power of attorney document to identify an agent to be able to make financial decisions on their behalf if they were unable to do so. And so going to the bank, paying the mortgage, paying bills, calling a credit card company, filing tax returns, any of that stuff from a financial perspective, it allows that agent that you've identified to be able to essentially step into your shoes to be able to do that for you. On the other side of that, we have healthcare. So in California, we have what's called an advanced healthcare directive. Some people know this as a living will. And this is basically the same as the power of attorney, but it's allowing you to identify an agent to be able to make healthcare decisions on your behalf if you are unable to do so. So it says, if something happened to me and I was incapacitated, this is the person I've identified to make decisions on my behalf, right? It lists those agents there. It also has backup agents. It also has certain end-of-life decisions. Do you want to be cremated? Do you want to be buried? Do you want to be kept on prolonged life support with extreme measures? Do you want to do any type of organ donation for transplant purposes? I know this is hard. I know it's a hard subject to talk about.
It was a little strange.
So important.
It was a little strange. It was a little weird. It was. And then my son that's six, he's turning 16 in 11 days. He goes, Mom, do I have to do this stuff? I said, not yet. When you're 18, you do. Yeah. But it is. It's a little weird. It's weird mm-hmm. to have those conversations, especially with your teenage child, you know, but it mm-hmm. it is important. I mean, if he was, God forbid, got into a really bad car accident, they don't have to talk to me if I mm-hmm. walk into the hospital. They don't have to give me the information. In that situation, what do they do if he's 18 years old and not married? Do they just make their decisions themselves, the doctors? I mean, how, you know?
So it's really dependent upon the situation, the facility that you're at. I've heard horror stories where kids have gone away to college and the parents are in another state and they call the hospital to find out what's going on and they won't talk to them. They won't give them any information. They won't say anything to them, right? And they're in a different state. They have no idea what's going on. And then I've heard other stories where if something happens to, you know, a young adult, if the parent's there, they'll talk to them. So it's really dependent upon it. I mean, technically they're not supposed to, right? With HIPAA laws. Same thing, you know, with anybody else. If you're not related to them, they, you know, you might have issues. So by having this documentation, it makes it very clear. This is what my wishes are. I have the ability to talk to these doctors. Talk to me.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I do think that that is really, really important. Like I said, I mean, it just really is a different, it's a different time, right? I mean, kids really are taking their time. They're not rushing to get married. They're doing it a little bit later, having babies a little bit later, moving out of the house a little bit later. Trust me, I've got my eye on Manny's room thinking that would be nice to work from home, make it a nice little office in there. he's actually laughing at me out the window right now. But, you know, it really is something really important because, you know, if something did happen to him, I mean, I would be Mother Bear. I mean, I would come unleashed if they wouldn't talk to me or they wouldn't give me the information that I needed, or I wasn't the person that was making those medical decisions for him, or couldn't, you know, go to the bank and get things handled for him with his accounts and, you know, anything, his car payment, right? You know, I mean, it's just things that have to be taken care of. So I hope that everybody is hearing this and you guys are understanding, you know, how important that it is for the planning. Krista, I know that you've got some great packages put together for people that, you know, they can pick just, you know, the basic, you know, package just to make sure that they're covered. And then they can do the really big, huge package, which I might have to talk to you a little bit about upgrading because I don't know if I want to have to go and put all my stuff into my trust by myself. So
it happens. Yes, it does.
But you know, your office was fantastic. You guys know what you're doing. I really hope that, you know, everybody listening does reach out and asks you questions. Estate planning mom. Didn't you have at one point estateplanningmom.com?
I do have it. And I'm actually launching an estate planning licensing program next year. And so it's going to be estate planning moms all over, estate planning moms and dads all over the country that are going to be a part of this network. And so hopefully when, especially with you having listeners all over the country, hopefully there will be an estate planning mom or dad in your area that I can refer you to.
Ah, I like it. So estateplanningmom.com, Hermann's Law, Krista Hermann's. Okay, one more thing that I do want you guys to talk, or I want you to talk about, but I want to give everybody your number. So it was 805, and I don't remember the rest.
518-9633.
Okay, perfect. And you guys can call me, obviously, and we can get you in touch with Krista. So you can call us at 844-935-3634. And all you have to do is say that you need the information for Krista, and we'll get y'all hooked up and handled. You guys can always email me, Debbie@mortgagemomradio.com. Go to the website, send me a message. Either way, however you get a hold of me, we're going to make sure that you get taken care of. So the last thing that I wanted to ask you was about your seminars, or you have something. I saw an email today. So talk about it so that everybody, because so, I think it's good. It's education.
Yeah, so once a month, at least once a month, we have webinars or workshops or seminars. So it's something. So if you want information about it, please reach out to us. So we can get you on our mailing list to know when the next one is going to be. In these webinars, I go through what is estate planning, right? What is a will? What is a trust? What is a power of attorney? Advanced healthcare directive? What is guardianship for minor children, right? What is long-term? What is short-term? And I go through all of these different topics to just really explain it, because I find that most people just aren't educated, right? It's a hard concept to understand. They, you know, stuff that they've heard of isn't necessarily actually true. Like my two favorite myths, wills are the only thing you need, which is completely false, right? All a will does is guarantee probate court. It doesn't keep you out of probate court. And then that trusts are just for the wealthy people, right? That is also not true. Trusts are for any person that wants to put a plan in place to make sure that their family is protected. And so I go through these things and explain it, and then people can ask questions and really get a good understanding about what our process is and what's included with it.
Oh, that's awesome. And so the next time that you, I know you just had one, so we just missed it. So the next time that you are going to have one of those, please make sure you send me the information far enough in advance that I'll make sure that when we send out our weekly newsletter, that we get the information in there for everybody that is subscribed to us and, you know, gets our newsletters. Hey, if you guys don't get our newsletters and you want our newsletter, all you have to do is call the office and talk to Matt. All he needs is an email address. It's that simple. sorry, Matt.
Yeah, no.
Sorry. You can text the word mom to 36260. That's 36260. Krista is texting Will to 474747. So I want to talk about that really fast, and then Krista, we're done. So I actually used to have text word mom to 474747. The company came back and said that I don't know, whatever reason, me and them didn't get along. They couldn't work with me because I was in mortgage or whatever the situation was. Tried to explain to them that I'm not selling mortgage product, that I'm bringing education. People are asking me questions during a live radio show. And they didn't like that. So we've got text the word mom to 36260. You guys can get my phone app. You guys can always give me a call. If you text mom to 36260, you will automatically go into our database and we'll get the newsletter, or you can always call Matt, which I know he loves, and you can give him your email address. But Krista, I love that you got the 474747. I hope that that's working out fantastic for you. And you did great today. I appreciate it.
Can I ask a fun question?
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just happened to watch Knives Out last night, which is all around a Will reading. Do movies about Wills drive you insane?
They definitely don't play out the way that they are portrayed in the movies. and it's also because California is very different, right? So California is very trust-driven. Probate court is not friendly in California. And so some other states, they have a friendly probate process, so maybe all you need is a will. California is not like that. So that is not how we do planning. And I do can think of a few movies where I'm just like, that is not realistic at all. So, yes.
All right. I've got one last one for you. So I have told my entire family, no, I am not Jewish, but I want them to, if I go, they have to sit Shiva. Can I put that in my trust?
Absolutely.
If they don't do it, they don't get anything. Matt's dying. Matt is absolutely sorry, buddy, but you're part of that. Everybody does know Matt is my brother. So yeah, Matt, you're part of that.
You want me to sit still?
Yes. It's only a couple of hours a day for 7 days. It helps everybody get through the trauma. You know, it's good for you. It's good for you. Heidi says that she's all in. She's going to be a sitter. So we're good. Anyway, Krista, you were amazing. I didn't think we were going to go the whole hour. We did. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it so much. I thank you so much. I hope that you have a fantastic evening. And everybody listening on Go Country Saturday morning, you guys, if you missed this, you could have absolutely asked questions you guys are thinking about. If you would have been watching live on YouTube, just find Mortgage Mom Radio, hit that subscribe button, click that bell twice, and make sure you turn on all, and you'll know when we go live. But we hope that you guys all have a fantastic evening. If it's Saturday morning, have a wonderful weekend, and we'll be back next week. Last show of the year. We'll be back next week. Thank you so much, Krista. We'll see you later.
Thank you.
All right. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Debbie Marcoux is licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act, NMLS ID 237926. Also licensed in Arizona 0941504, Georgia 69178, Illinois 031.0058339, Nevada 57237, Oregon, Tennessee 184373, Texas, Washington MLO 237926. Heidi Slagle Points, California DBO 1666881.
She's a mortgage mom. She can get things done. When you're in need and don't know where to go, pick up the phone and call mom. She's a mortgage mom.
This is Debbie Marcoux, the mortgage mom. Interest rates are really low right now, and you know how you could take advantage? Well, get into a shorter term mortgage. If you could get the same payment that you have right now today, but you could cut some time off of that mortgage, what better way to look into your financial future? Give me a call. Let's talk about it. Let's go over your scenario together. It's 844-935-3634. Or go to my website, mortgagemomradio.com. You can contact me right through the website, and I will give you a call.
She's a mortgage mom. She can get things done. When you're in need and don't know where to go, pick up the phone. phone and call mom.
Teddy Marker was licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California NMLS ID 237926. Also licensed in Texas and Tennessee 184373. Arizona 0941504. And Nevada 57237.